This film has been certificated as Sky PG for parental guidance. World International Network, in association with Alexander Enright and Associates, presents the 1998 drama Point Last Seen. Inspired by actual events and starring Linda Hamilton, this film is about a woman who becomes a desert tracker searching for other people's children after her own go missing with their violent father. Dawn breaks over rocky scrubland. The moon loses its hold on the night as the sky grows lighter. The clouds glow orange and red as daylight takes hold. Brush and scrubland, broken only by cacti, stretches for miles in every direction. A woman sits on the covered porch of a bungalow. The building seems warm, picking up the pink-red light of the morning sun, but the woman notices nothing. Sitting on a sofa, hands in her lap, her mid-length dark blonde hair pushed back over one ear, she stares away into the distance. A look of loss and defeat rests like an unwanted tenant on her face. The sky grows lighter still, and a gentle breeze ruffles her hair, but still she doesn't move. Inside the house, a man wakes up sprawled across a large double bed. He gets up and looks out of the window, unsurprised that he is alone.
Hi.
Dressed in a t-shirt and jogging pants, the man in his 40s, tanned with short light brown hair and a handsome weathered face, walks from the bedroom through the living room and leans against the doorframe. He looks into the room. It is a child's bedroom. There are two beds, both made, with teddy bears placed on them. In the kitchen there are pictures of two children, a boy and a girl. The man takes out some orange juice and methodically sets a tray with two glasses and two mugs of coffee that he takes outside. He gently sets it on a table in front of the sofa on the porch. The woman looks up and thanks him silently with her eyes and then turns away again. He picks up a stool and sets it at the small coffee table. He sits down and gently smiles at her, picking up a mug and drinking. A police pickup truck drives along the dusty track that leads off the highway to the house. They both turn and watch it as it pulls off the track and into the driveway. The woman looks on, hope barely concealed in her eyes as the sheriff parks and gets out of the car. She is obviously waiting for something. Almost rising, she leans forward on the sofa in anticipation but goes no further. The man studies her face before getting up and walking along a grey brick footpath through a dry but neatly kept garden to the policeman. Slowly she also gets up, but leans against the corner of the house, watching and listening.
Morning, Don.
Morning, Frank.
You out mighty early?
How is she?
Well, she's a lot better than I would be.
A little girl's gone missing. Can I see her?
Well, she hadn't slept in a week.
I need her, Frank.
You hear anything, Don?
No.
It's only 8 a.m. You're sweating already.
Hell, I got some trouble on a Cactus Springs campground. A little girl's disappeared.
Rachel, you don't have to do this.
How little?
9.
How long?
Well, her parents woke up about 6. She was missing. Everyone at the campground's been looking for her ever since. Can't find a sign of her.
You call Elkwood County?
Yeah, they got a search on of their own.
Copper Lake?
They can't get anybody down here for 4 or 5 hours. Prediction's 96, 97 degrees. The little girl's name is Mandy. Mandy Ellis. Her mother and her sister are waiting at campsite 28.
They look at each other, knowing how difficult this is for her.
I better go get changed.
Rachel, I don't think you should do this. And I sure don't think you're in any shape to go out there.
I'm not doing anyone any good here.
But that's not the point.
It is the point, Frank. Always has been. If I think I'm screwing up, I'll bring myself in.
Rachel pulls open the outer door of the house and goes inside as the sheriff gets back into his pickup and drives away. Inside, she picks out her uniform, a yellow shirt with the word rescue sewn on the right shoulder, khaki trousers, thick socks and hiking boots, and takes off her t-shirt. Her back and shoulders carry deep, angry scars. Lost in thought, fear and resignation line her face as she sits.
I'll be doing dispatch. I'll make sure any calls get patched through.
She gets up from the chair and clips on her belt. Opening the wardrobe door, she picks out a picture from several pinned to the inside. They are all photographs of a boy and girl, but this one has them both in it. The teenage boy has his arm around the girl. They're both smiling. She puts the picture in her breast pocket above her heart and holds it close for a second. Then, turning, she strides to the corner, picking up a long cane and rucksack, and walks out to the car as Frank steps into the room and follows her out. His Forest Ranger's badge glints in the sun on his uniform. Leaning on the roof of the car, Frank gently brushes her hair off her face and raises her sunglasses to look at her.
You should leave the door unlocked, in case they get home before I do.
Okay.
We gotta go, Frank.
He opens the door and she climbs in.
Call the DA's office, make sure they have the numbered search base.
Putting on her seatbelt, she nods and pats his hand.
I'll see you soon.
He watches as she reverses out of the drive onto the track and drive away before turning back to the house. Although the scenery seems green and inviting, it is very hot even at this early hour. The greenery hides the arid, rocky ground. Rachel, her sunglasses on, drives along the highway. She looks only at the road, not noticing the cacti and shrubs either side of the highway. The car windows are open and the wind plays gently with her hair as she drives. Telegraph poles, stark and rigid, stretch into the distance along the highway. Apart from one parked car, they are the only signs of man in this desolate place.
Rachel, it's Frank.
I'm here, Frank.
Rachel, I've got an investigator on the line from the DA's office. I'll patch her through. Go ahead.
Rachel Harrison?
Yes?
Hi, this is Corinne Davis. I'm an investigator with the DA's Child Abduction Unit, and I have just been assigned to your case.
Why now?
Well, your children have been gone for a week, and I think it's time we found them. All modesty aside, I'm the best. How long were you married to this loser?
6 years.
Did he abuse you?
Yeah.
Do you have any reason at all to think that he might actually kill someone?
I don't know. People have died.
All right, we're gonna nail this bastard, and we're gonna get your children back. I'll be in touch.
Rachel pulls off the highway onto a dirt track leading to the campsite.
The process of getting lost seems lengthy and complex on the surface, but it is quite often nothing of the sort. Two steps off the trail, and then two more. A wash that looks like a trail that looks like a creek bed, and you can be just as lost as if somebody had dumped you on the moon. The tracker's job is to find those first two steps, that first mistake, that disastrous detour. That's the place the finding begins. But tracking one's life, I suppose it's the same. I suppose you have to go back to the very beginning, before you were lost. We call that the point last seen.
Are you Mrs. Ellis? Rachel Harrison.
Are you gonna find Mandy?
Yes, we are. If you could just have a seat at that little table while I cordon off the area, I'll be right with you. Ladies, if I could just ask you to step aside.
Oh, sure.
The mother and her youngest daughter sit and attaches the end of a red plastic tape to a stone wall and starts to reel it out, cordoning off the family's tent.
What?
I will be right with you.
She walks backwards between a brick-built covered area and an igloo-shaped green tent, keeping the tape taut.
She's not here. We looked for hours.
Yes, I know that, ma'am, but she was here for 2 days. And that means she left a print somewhere. Do you know what she had on her feet?
Just tennis shoes, you know, from the discount store.
Old or new?
We bought them brand new for the trip.
And what size were they?
I don't know. You know, the sizing is so crazy now. She must have tried on dozens.
Size 3.
Lisa, you don't really know that.
I saw it on the bottom of her shoe when she was kicking me.
Did you see anything else on the bottoms? Something that would help me know that the footprint that I find is hers?
Like these straight lines?
Mm-hmm, like those.
She didn't have them. She only had diamonds with squiggles. Mine are much more better tennies.
Did you see anything else?
Gum. She stepped in gum.
Well, that's a big help. Well, I see a lot of your straight lines. Would you like to follow your sister?
I just like to be with her.
Yeah, my little girl is like that with her brother.
A look of pained understanding passes between the two mothers as Rachel looks down to the ground looking for tracks. She walks past the mother and daughter and climbs over the tape by the stone wall. Looking down, she notices a broken flower stem. A daisy has been trodden into the earth, and the imprint of a tennis shoe with a diamond and squiggle pattern on the sole marks the first track.
You find one?
This was made this morning.
How do you know?
This flower here that she stepped on has just begun to dry.
Mandy would never step on a flower.
She wouldn't even step on ants.
Did she have a flashlight?
Yes.
Did she take it?
Lisa, the little girl, runs to the tent to check.
She left before dawn. She stepped on this flower because she didn't see it.
Lying her cane over the imprint, Rachel checks which direction the girl had taken and ties blue tape to the stem of some tall grass to mark the track. Taking out a notebook, she quickly draws a sketch of the child's...
Okay, I'm gonna follow Mandy now. There'll be other rangers and trackers along in a few minutes. You could just stay put and show them what I found. That would be a big help.
The woman hands Rachel a picture of a pretty girl with blonde hair.
Save it. To show the others.
I'm sorry for all the trouble.
It's no trouble.
As Rachel turns and unhooks her tracker's cane from her belt, the mother hurries her daughter to a chair and sitting picks the girl up and holds her tight, all the while watching as Rachel starts to track her lost child. Eyes focused on the ground in front of her, Rachel bends down to check the girl's direction with her cane and looks up at the signs for the restrooms, lecture circle, and nature trail.
There's nothing magic or instinctive about tracking. People tend to keep going about the speed they have been going. You establish their stride. You can narrow down where their foot next has to fall. All you need is a stick, and patience and attention to detail, and a willingness to spend a lot of time in the dirt. The dirt part was easy. I grew up a tomboy on a small farm in Louisiana. The patience part was harder. I was born 2 months early, and for a long time I saw no reason to look back. The attention to detail, that quality was...
Rachel remembers herself as a much younger woman in a bathroom watching a man check how neat the towels are.
I put the lace on myself.
Makes them look pretty. It's good. One thumb width exactly.
Having checked the space between the towels, the man minutely realigns two items on the sink and opens the bathroom cabinet. The young Rachel looks on, terrified, as he turns a bottle on the shelf no more than half a centimeter so that more of the label can be seen. The man's growing disgust at her work shows as he closes his eyes and clenches his teeth. He turns towards Rachel, who is standing by the door. Her fists are clenched tight at her sides as he reaches above her and runs his finger along the doorframe. It comes away black with dust. He turns his finger towards her, at which she bolts out of the bathroom door.
Come here!
Completely terrified, Rachel runs frantically away outside into the darkness to hide. He chases her, fury burning in his eyes, but pulls up suddenly as he runs out of the light, steps back into the pale glow from the porch light, breathing hard and staring angrily into the darkness.
You think you're safe now? Just because I'm afraid of the dark. Rachel, I'm just trying to teach you. Isn't that what you wanted? That's what you said. Where are you gonna go, huh? Your daddy said, you make your bed, you lie in it. Rachel.
Standing in an unfinished building next door, Rachel listens in terror. Slowly she walks back to the house, and the man, her husband, reaches for her. Clamping his left hand onto the back of her neck, he leads her inside. He looks over his shoulder as if checking that no one can see them and steps inside after her. The memory fades as Rachel, sun hat shielding her face from the fierce glare, looks towards the lavatories and shakes her head to clear her mind. She walks to the women's toilet and, looking inside, sees a small yellow torch lying on the floor. With the tip of her cane, Rachel pushes the torch to reveal a name on the side. Mandy Ellis.
Tracker went to base.
Go ahead, Juan.
I've cordoned off campsite 28 and have tracks isolated and marked all the way to the restroom. I'm trying to restart them from here. I found the girl's flashlight on the restroom floor, but I have not touched it. I don't know if she lost it or if there was a struggle.
Oh, man.
And base, there are cars going in and out of this campground left and right.
I'm going to shut the park down and send Dale up in the sheriff's chopper, see what he can see.
I'm heading down to do a perimeter cut on the campground.
Copy.
Rachel, you okay?
Perimeter cut shouldn't be done by one. I could really use some help here.
Now, Jennings is sending two rangers, ETA 45 minutes.
Base over.
Tracker, one copy.
As she watches the cars leaving the campsite and obscuring the other tracks, she is back with her husband again. She sits silently in the cab of a pickup truck with her son as her husband drives them out into the desert. The little boy sits in a car seat between them. Her husband stops the car and unbuckles his seatbelt.
Get out of the truck.
Kevin, you said no trouble.
This is no trouble. This is why we came. So I could get rid of you and take John and find a decent mother.
God-fearing, obedient mother.
Having got out of the pickup, Kevin opens the passenger door and unbuckles Rachel's seatbelt. She is pregnant. He points a gun at her stomach.
I'll shoot you here, I'll go right through them. No one needs to say goodbye. He won't remember you. Come on.
Pushing her away with the barrel of the pistol, he stands behind her, pointing the gun to the sky and looking.
You know those love poems I wrote that made you fall in love with me? I didn't even write them for you. And you move again, and I'll put a bullet in that boy before you take a second step. Come on, move. Please move.
Having fired into the air and then at her feet, Kevin, disgust on his face, stares at Rachel and goes back to the truck. The wind pushes the passenger door shut, and he walks round to the driver's side and climbs in.
You're never gonna get out of this place alive, anyway.
Kevin drives off in a cloud of dust.
Tracker one, it's Don.
Come in, Don. It's Tracker one.
We got Bureau of Land Management on the north, Elkwood Sheriff's on the south, checking all vehicles leaving. Rach, you weren't here when that baby went missing. That was my search. We never did find her. A piece of her skull turned up 2 years later. Please tell me, this little girl's still alive?
I'm doing the perimeter. It's gonna take time.
Cutting for sign is the hardest kind of tracking. Going on nothing but the fact that if someone is not where they were, they must have left it. And if they left on foot, they had to leave tracks. By circling the campground, the theory goes, I had to intersect Mandy's path as she walked away from the campground. The trouble is, even an obvious print is hard to see when you're coming at it from a 90-degree angle. And there's no guarantee a print is going to be obvious. And I only get one chance. I could walk a mile before I intersected those few lines with a gum smudge. And if I walked right by them, or if at that point she stepped on a rock and didn't leave a print at all, but only the slightest disturbance, maybe scattered sand, maybe a dislodged pebble, and I missed it, then from that point on, I'd be walking away from her, and she'd be somewhere behind me, gone.
Mandy!
And I had done that. Once before, I had missed seeing the right path. And now it was too late to find it again.
While searching for the track, Rachel thinks back to when Kevin left her in the desert. Pregnant, tired and lost, she follows the tire marks left by Kevin's truck. They wind through the dirt and scrubland. Bushes and small trees break the monotony of the wilderness themselves. She looks all around, but there is nothing but scrub and tire tracks. The wind starts to blow more strongly. Following the tire marks, she looks up to see the red pickup truck coming back. She stops and watches as Kevin turns the truck round and stops about 50 meters ahead of her. The passenger door opens, and Rachel struggles to run to the truck before Kevin changes his mind. At the campsite, Rachel is still cutting the perimeter. The terrain has become much rockier and the sun is higher in the sky. It is very hot. Carefully, Rachel picks her way through loose rocks and shrubs and spots a footprint with a diamond and squiggly lines. Dropping to her knees, she marks the direction with her cane and unclips her radio.
Tracker one to base. I've got fresh prints.
Above campsite 7 and heading due north. Tell her mom. Mandy's here.
As Rachel looks in the direction Mandy has gone, base camp is a hive of activity.
Search base ahead, Ranger.
Go ahead, Frank.
I'm going to need a fuel truck down here for this chopper. Can you send one my direction?
We'll get on it right away.
I copy. Base to Allen.
Go ahead, base.
Jerry and Fran should be at your location any minute now to take over checking cars. You'll report back to base stat. We got a landing zone to prepare.
I copy. They're pulling up now, and I'm on my way out. This is Deep Creek Training Base. We got 3 platoons of ground troops and transit by convoy. Estimated arrival, 65 minutes. Over and out.
I did leave Kevin, finally. He'd begun choking me into unconsciousness nightly. After a month of that, I couldn't talk. I could barely breathe. My throat was so swollen. And I decided if I was going to die, I'd rather it be running than in silence in a corner of my own house. So I took the kids and ran when Kevin left us alone for 10 minutes. We made it to Montana, where John and Ruthie learned for the first time that other people didn't think my getting potatoes too brown was reason for a beating. For three wonderful weeks, we were free.
Walking on, Rachel remembers her little boy and girl playing in a garden, pulling a cart with flowers in it. She is kneeling, digging in a flower bed. The vest she wet full bruises to her upper arms. An old man comes across the garden from the house behind her.
Don't work too hard now. Room and board ain't worth that much.
This isn't work.
Well, dang, those kids don't look like they ever saw mud before.
Their daddy liked us inside. Spick and span.
Well, here, I got something they should like.
He carries a bucket full of bubbles.
Try and catch him, Ruthie.
Ruthie, the little girl, follows the old man round the garden, chasing bubbles. Rachel watches, smiling, but suddenly sees Kevin and another man standing out in the street watching. Kevin points at the children. Rachel rushes to grab them.
Ruthie! Ruthie! Come on, inside.
As the old man follows her, the man with Kevin comes through the garden gate.
Don't say a word, okay?
Rachel shuts the children in another room and frantically dials the telephone as the old man reaches for something in a drawer nearby.
Up here, come on.
Ms. Harrison? Name's Jameson. I'm a private investigator. What if I might talk to you for a minute?
We talk with this here.
The old man raises a pistol as Jameson comes into the room.
Ma'am, your husband hired me to come here and find you. He told me you'd been brainwashed, that you run off with another man. I've been driving with him for 3 days, and I know now that that man's dangerous, crazy. I don't think he's gonna hurt you as long as I'm around. But if he should come at you and I'm not in evidence, you shoot him, ma'am. You shoot him dead.
Jameson nods, turns, and walks out of the house. Rachel stares at him in fear and disbelief.
The PI testified at the custody trial. But in Missouri, deserting your husband is considered a greater offense than splattering your wife's blood around the kitchen. The judge gave Kevin my kids. For years, I worked three jobs around the clock to make enough money to fight him. I fought and I fought. But Kevin was a charmer, oh yes. And in the end, I had nothing. No custody, not even any visitation. And on the day the decree became absolutely final, when there was nowhere to turn, no more ways to try, I came to the desert, where he had once dumped me, as he said, because here no one cares about the odd headless body. I came to a place that to my Pinewood's eyes looked like hellfire and damnation brought to earth. Because I couldn't bear thinking about what he was doing to my babies, I guess I came here to die.
Chopper 1 to Tracker 1.
Come in, Chopper 1.
Got a couple of Copper Lakers up here for you.
Rachel lights a flare to show her position in the rocky terrain.
There you are. Okay, there's a flat place below me. Are you okay for me to set down there?
Yeah, that'll be fine.
The helicopter sets down several hundred meters away from Rachel and two men jump out. They are both carrying rucksacks and canes. They make their way over the rocks towards Rachel. As the helicopter leaves, the only thing to join it on the skyline is an enormous cactus under which Rachel is waiting.
Ow. Damn. Things are high.
They shake hands.
Rachel.
Jason.
Skip, the rookie.
It's my kid brother.
Well, we appreciate you coming anyway.
Hey, adrenaline's better than sex, right? So, where's the track?
I just got a good one.
Jason and Skip follow Rachel to the track. Rachel points out the print in the rocky soil and they both bend down for a closer look.
That's good.
She hands Jason her notebook.
Okay, see how she's got the mark there, right? There's the stride. You heel to toe. You mark the diamond, all of the stuff in there. Don't you identify the print when you see it? Okay? You got that? So, I'll take point.
Sure. You ever worked this terrain before?
Yeah, we had a weekend immersion in the Mojave.
Jason practically runs mountain rescue up at Copper Lake.
That's after rappelling down a cliff to rescue two yo-yos out of a car after they'd rolled off a highway. This should be easy.
Easy, but different. Why don't you take flank just till you're settled in? There'll be lots of time to switch off. She's got a 5-hour jump on us. Our eyes are gonna get tired.
Speak for yourself. I'm raring to go.
Jason! You're on the track.
I don't see a single footprint.
You don't always get prints in this terrain. Sometimes there's just breakage or shine on a rock, like here. There. And there. You see that?
You know, that chopper's gonna spot her before we even get started.
As long as she's found.
As Rachel leads off, Skip and Jason look at each other. Jason is annoyed at having been shown up in front of his brother, but they turn and follow, with Skip on the left flank. All three walk with their heads bowed to the ground, with Skip showing much more interest than his elder, more experienced brother. As they pass another enormous cactus, they fall in behind Rachel with Jason at the rear. The heat is now stifling, and Jason takes off his cap to wipe the sweat from his brow.
Dead, all this screwing around.
This is how it's done.
Oh, right. As if you want your picture on the front page with a corpse.
Do not speak of her like that. You think you could do better?
I know.
Jason pushes on ahead, pointing with his cane.
Here, here, and there, and there. It's easy. See that?
Skip follows his brother, head bowed to the ground, looking for the tracks Jason has pointed out, as Rachel watches them both.
I don't see anything, Jace.
That's why I'm taking point.
This should be Prince here.
Let Rachel keep the point. What point? There's nothing here to see. We've been looking at broken twigs and pebbles all day.
We're gonna have to cut a perimeter.
Around what? All of this? It'll take us hours.
Well, then we better get started.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that would be just your style. Slogging around in this crap in a circle. Admit it. You lost her. You've been jerking us around here for hours.
I have had just about enough from you. You are wasting my time. So I'm asking you to leave this search.
Come on, Jace, let's go.
Look, all I know is that I've successfully completed over a dozen rescues this year, and you yahoos are famous for losing a 3-year-old girl.
That was a long time ago. And since I became a tracker, we haven't lost anybody.
Oh, yeah? That's not what I heard. I'm going back to base. Skip? You coming?
Yeah, I'm coming.
You better go with him. He might not find his way back.
Might not be much of a loss. I know you've got real troubles. I just don't know how you leave him at home.
Her brow furrowed with the pain of her memories, Rachel thinks about her son John and daughter Ruthie. They're all walking along a dirt track hand in hand. They stop, and all three sit down in the dirt and lie back, brushing their arms and legs from side to side and up and down, making dirt angels. On the mountain, Rachel sits on a rock, her head in her hands. She is crying.
Don to Tracker One. Don to Tracker One.
Rachel shakes her head to clear the memory and wipes the tears from her eyes. Composing herself, she unclips her radio and takes a deep breath.
Come in, Don.
How's it going?
Chopper see anything?
Chopper One to Tracker One. Nada. You sure she's here?
Rachel holds the radio and walks forward, looking at the ground. She stops and squats down, searching for clues.
She was here, Don. Mandy Ellis was here.
Okay, that's enough for me. I'll hold off the soldiers. Just find her. Over and out.
She nods and wipes her eyes again. Standing up, she picks up her hat from a rock and collects her gear, heading on up the trail.
Base to Tracker One.
Come in, Base One.
We got some trackers here from Lone Pine.
I sure could use them. I got a perimeter cut on about 3 acres of rock, and we're losing light. We gotta narrow down this search. Put any trackers you got along the highway to do a cut. If they don't see any of our tracks on the soft sand along the shoulder, then we got our western end.
Frank marks a line on the map on the wall.
If she'd have gotten to the highway, don't you think someone would have seen her?
Unless that somebody put her in the trunk of their car.
Oh, Lord.
Send another team along the old mining road that runs out of the campground. Between that and the highway, we've got a corridor that's about a mile wide. And I'm right in the middle.
Got it.
She's here. She's scared now. Tracker One over.
Rachel clips on her radio and puts her map away. She walks over a rocky patch of ground surrounded by small trees and shrubs growing up the side of a hill.
Base to One.
Base to One.
Go ahead, Base.
Have an incoming call from Corrine Davis.
She stops and turns, looking back the way she has come. Tension and anxiety cloud her face as she breathes deeply, preparing herself.
Patch her through.
Corrine sits behind a desk. Rachel stands alone on a rocky outcrop as the light begins to fade.
Rachel?
I can hear you, Corrine.
We've made some progress. Now, we know that he drove from the courthouse to that takeout place on 26. But from there, apparently he went right to the Costa Verde airport, and then he flew to Vegas from there.
And my kids?
Corrine. Were my kids with him?
Well, 3 tickets were used, so I'm saying yes, but after that, we cannot raise him. Do you have any idea at all where he might have taken them?
The desert. That's what he always said.
Well, that's a lot of territory.
Well, if you got a point last seen, I know a pretty good tracker.
Right. That's just what he wants. Anyway, who'd be out there for that little girl?
Who's out there for my kids, Corrine?
Me. Trust me, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, I get a sick feeling in my stomach when I have to say things like that.
Yeah, but you say it anyway, don't you?
Yes.
And you bring him back alive every time, don't you?
Not every time. Most times.
So do I. Keep the faith.
Corrine, if you find a sign, I'm going this time. I'm going.
Lost in thought, Rachel is back on a street corner, her eyes frantically searching the passing cars. A white pickup drives up behind her and parks. Frank, concern etched in his face, leans out of the window.
Hi. And I don't think he's going to show. He said noon is going on.
She turns away, watching the traffic.
Rachel, don't shut me out of this, please.
He said he was bringing me my kids.
Come on. Let me take you home. You don't want to miss it if he calls.
Kevin had won custody. He had my kids. But he continued to torment me, even after I thought I had no more ways to feel pain. And then I met Frank. I think we both hoped that he could rescue me from this nightmare. Instead, I dragged him in.
Rachel answers the phone.
Hello?
Well, I got held up. How about tomorrow?
Kevin, I've been out there for 3 days in a row, missing work.
You want your kids or not?
Yes.
Okay, here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna go out to the desert. You're gonna meet me alone out there. Show me that you trust me. None of your ranger friends, no one. And believe me, I'll be able to see them coming. You meet me alone, and I'll let you have your kids.
Where?
At Dirt Road past Darby Dry Lake. And just keep on it. I'll be waiting for you somewhere nice. Say, in 4 hours.
Okay.
Anyone comes with you, you'll never see your kids again. You got it? Bye.
With tired resignation, she replaces the receiver and looks at Frank.
Tonight, up near Darby.
Okay. I'm gonna go with you.
No. He said no.
I don't care what he says. I know this country. He doesn't.
Rachel looks pleadingly at Frank sitting at the kitchen table and grabs the phone. Frank picks up the extension. The caller's face is badly bruised.
Hello.
You don't know me, but I know what your children say about you. And I had to warn you. He calls you a whore, but he calls me the same thing.
Who is this?
It doesn't matter. I've got to try and get away from him. God help me. And I'm sorry about what happened with your children. Whatever you do, don't meet him alone in the desert. Because you'll all die. Horribly. Oh, God, horribly. Please, don't go, okay?
Frank replaces the receiver and crosses the kitchen.
We should call the police, Rachel.
It wouldn't make a difference. The police can't stop him.
Well, I'm not letting you go out there alone.
It's not your decision. He said that if I don't go, I will never see them again.
If you do go, he's gonna kill them right in front of your eyes, Rachel. It's you that he wants, and he's gonna keep them alive as long as it takes to get you.
Sweetie, their best chance is for you to stay away.
Still in her memory, Rachel sits on the porch with the telephone nearby.
Where are you?
I will not meet you alone.
Then your kids will always know you didn't love them or want them. Isn't that right, kids? You got that? Bye.
She sits in stunned disbelief as Kevin slams the payphone receiver into its cradle. On the trail, Rachel climbs part of a hill and, rounding a clump of bushes, sees the imprint of a tennis shoe, squiggly lines and the diamond pattern. The footprint points up the hill through a narrow, densely foliated track. Rachel looks up the track and then all around, gauging her position before unclipping her radio.
Tracker one to base.
Go ahead, one.
I got a track. She has changed direction and is now heading well into the mountains. You got anybody on that mining road?
Tracker team three to tracker one. We're on the mining road. We've done about a quarter mile so far.
Be aware that the gumwad on her right sole is wearing down rapidly and might not be there by the time you find a track. You copy that, search base?
Okay, base out.
Back at the base, Frank marks Mandy Ellis's new course on the map and walks outside. Night is drawing in, and the thin clouds glow red as the sun sets. He turns to look at the mountains, squat and brooding in the dwindling daylight and tinged a rust colour by the setting sun. Frank goes back to the office and sits, waiting. On the mountain, her hunched figure silhouetted against the skyline, Rachel finds it more and more difficult to spot Mandy's tracks in the gathering gloom.
Base to one.
Come in, base.
Rachel, I'm pulling you in. I want you to get somewhere the chopper can find you.
No, Frank, I'm staying out. It's the only way I can make up time.
Listen, you've been out there for almost 14 hours. You need some rest.
Frank, don't make me come in.
Frank struggles to control his concern for her.
Okay, but tell me where you are exactly.
Rachel reaches into her backpack and takes out a map and torch.
I'm just above Coyote Well. Not too far from the old mining road Tracker Team 3 is cutting.
Got it. Team 2 finished the highway, so I've turned them onto the Fire Road 3.
That's good. That gives us a northern edge on the search field.
How do you think she's holding up?
I don't know. She's still stopping to look at birds.
I'll get some rest. Good night, Rach.
Frank marks her position on the map while Rachel fixes her torch to the end of her cane. She stands slowly, swinging her backpack over her shoulders. Hunching over with exhaustion, she leans forward, playing the light from her torch over the ground in front of her. Her field of vision is restricted to the small patch of light at the end of her cane, causing her to peer even more intently at the floor. The only light apart from her torch is the faint silver of the moon casting awkward shadows and softening the harsh spikes of the cacti. As she walks carefully past bushes and shrubs, holding her cane out in front of her in her left hand, she gently massages the muscles in her forearm. It does not help, as her arm starts to shake with the effort. She transfers the cane to her right hand and continues in the darkness. She stops suddenly, unsure of what she is seeing. As it dawns on her, she takes the radio from her belt and tries to control her disappointment. Back at the base, a woman reaches for the radio.
Frank, do you copy?
Sorry, Rachel. Frank's gone to a meeting at HQ. This is Rita.
What can I do for you?
Better tell teams 2 and 3 that our little girl has crossed the mining road and has moved outside of our perimeter.
Tracker 1, this is 3. What do you want us to do?
We gotta build a new box. And Rita, could you get to headquarters and tell them that we need more trackers? Temperatures topped 100 today. She's gotta be fried to a crisp. Now it's cold, and we have to worry about hypothermia.
I'll run right over, hon.
Rachel bends her head again and slumps into her now natural tracking stance. Head down, rounded shoulders, cane held before her. Shining the torch over twigs and rocks, she settles into the irregular rhythm of the child's track. She holds the cane in her right hand and attempts to steady it with her left, carefully studying the ground as she continues through the rocky, cactus-strewn landscape of the mountain.
Rachel? Rachel, they've arrested him. The Missouri police found the house that he was staying in. They were very careful. They didn't want to rush him, give him a chance to hurt the children. They just waited till he came out and then they nabbed him.
Eyes wide with anticipation and fear, Rachel grips the radio.
And were my kids with him?
Kids weren't there. Rachel, is anyone with you?
My kids are with me. My kids are with me. My kids are with me.
Rachel, don't give up hope, okay? Now the police are questioning him. Whatever they find out, I will let you know.
Her hands clasped to her chest, Rachel lies back on the ground.
Call me if you need me. I'll be here all night. Please call me.
Bases, Tracker Team 2. Does the child have any food or water?
None that we know of.
How long you figure she's been walking?
13, 14 hours.
Why hasn't she just dropped?
Because it's so hard to accept. There's no way home.
Lying on her back on the rocky ground, Rachel cries herself to sleep. Dawn breaks over the mountain. The soft white clouds very high in the sky serve to highlight the jagged edges of the rocks and cacti. Rachel continues her search.
The desert doesn't heal the pain of losing one's children, or even numb it. But the desert just doesn't care. And so you keep walking. Your terror passes for courage. And somehow in the midst of it, you realize that you are surviving. And then after that, you wonder why.
The incline of the hill gets steeper and the ground rockier as Rachel makes her way up the mountain. She looks ahead and is confronted with a huge red rock summit about half a mile away. She stops and reaches for her radio.
Tracker 1 to base.
Come in, Rachel.
Rita, any word from Elkwood? She's headed right up Quattro Summit.
Elkwood says their search is narrowing down. They hope to have at least 6 trackers on their way to us by lunchtime.
Lunchtime? She'll be dead by lunchtime.
The tracks lead upwards, and Rachel follows them through bushes and small shrubs, cacti and rocks. The heat is already intense, and there is no available shelter. As Rachel walks slowly around a huge boulder, she stops suddenly. Ahead of her is an opening in the rock, and she imagines that she glimpses a little girl's leg disappearing inside. She looks in through the opening, which is no more than a short tunnel through the rock.
Mandy?
Rachel looks around inside, checking everywhere.
Mandy!
Avoiding the dusty floor of the tunnel by standing on rocks, Rachel suddenly notices 2 sets of thin tracks and squats down. One is of 2 symmetrical lines, the indents parallel as though someone has been playing with a toy, walking it up and down across the floor. The other set is Mandy's shoes.
Tracker 1 to base.
Come in, 1.
I found the place where she slept last night.
Way to go.
She wouldn't have left before first light, so I can't be more than 3 hours behind her.
But Rita, can you reach her family for
Rita me? Rita taps on the office window.
They're right outside. Good. Can you ask them a question? Did she have a Barbie with her?
Oh, my God.
Rachel, it's Frank. What's up?
There are all these tracks around where she was lying.
If she has her Barbie, then she has to have her day pack. There was food in that and water.
How much water?
A whole big bottle.
What size bottle?
Like that, what is that? 24 ounces.
How about food?
She had those cheese and cracker packets, and there were three crackers and some of that cheese food. That should help, don't you think?
Everything's helpful. She's still playing with her Barbie.
You're gonna find her, aren't you? She's been out there a long time. All alone.
Yes, we are. We're gonna find her.
Rachel looks worried, her face lacking the confidence in her voice. She clips the radio back on her belt and gets up, looking for a...
I could have told her the truth. A human needs a gallon of water a day in this weather. That 24 ounces was long gone. Who was I protecting, her or me? I was on my hands and knees tracking a Barbie. But this Barbie was smart and tough. She realized she could follow her own prints backwards. Barbie did it, and then suddenly Mandy realized she could do the same thing. Excited, Mandy jumped up to try. But this mountain was no place for the first lessons of a beginner. The only tracks were too subtle to be easily seen. And in the snappings of twigs, in the circle of confused scuff marks, was written how her hope slowly failed. Where she sat in despair, where she was growing dizzy, where she got up and staggered on. They say it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved. But I think the opposite is true of hope and losing it. Mandy had discovered lost hope was worse than no hope. She'd begun to die.
Her head in her hands, Rachel has a flashback. She's in her kitchen.
Hey, it's Rachel. Leave a message.
I'm giving you the kids back. I'm getting married.
I figured it's time they knew their mother.
What can I say, Rach? I guess love's mellowed me out. So, we're setting out tomorrow. I'll let you get them enrolled in schools before September. I'm drawing up this paper giving you custody.
Total custody. We'll call again from Dallas, someplace I get.
Okay, you got it? Bye.
He said he's bringing the kids back.
Waiting in a car park with Frank, Rachel watches as a red pickup truck with two children inside pulls around the corner of a building and drives towards them.
That's him.
Kevin parks the truck and a boy desperately unbuckles his seatbelt, uncontained joy on his face.
They're so big.
Rachel hugs the boy as he gets out.
Hi. Hi. Oh, look at you.
Ruthie, it's Mama.
Hey, Ruthie.
Come on, Ruthie. Get out of the truck.
Kevin stares smugly at Rachel.
Hi.
Frank.
Sir. Oh, gosh, you're so big.
Yeah, they're growing like weeds.
Thank you, Kevin.
I figure they can visit me summers, holidays. I don't want to entirely lose touch.
Whatever you say.
Well, I got a long trip back, so better get going. You gonna say goodbye to me, kids?
Goodbye, sir.
All right, sir.
Bye, Daddy.
Be nice to your mommy. Got it?
Yes, sir.
It's supposed to be Frank. Nice to meet you, Frank.
Planning on staying around these parts very long?
No. I want to clear the desert by nightfall. I don't much like deserts. I'll be seeing y'all.
Kevin gets into the pickup and reverses. Without looking back, he drives away. Rachel, John, and Ruthie watch him leave, a mixture of relief and disbelief on their faces. Frank looks over at them.
Wasn't so bad.
Everyone is asleep at the house.
No, God, no, God, no! No! I'll kill myself before I go back with him.
Ruthie looks on as Frank and Rachel comfort John. On the mountain, Rachel stumbles around a large rock and loses her footing, tumbling down a slope covered in rocks and cacti. Over and over she rolls, stopping suddenly and banging her head onto the ground. She regains consciousness. She watches the wind wipe clear a print of Mandy's shoe as insects and snakes scurry everywhere.
I taught myself tracking, not long after I came here. The head ranger asked me to. There wasn't a single tracker in all of the park, and I had nothing else to do. I read a book on the basics, then I went out into the desert. Solitary time. No distractions, no breaks, no visiting. Hundreds of hours of just me out there, following whatever tracks I could find, as far as I could follow them. In all kinds of weather, in all kinds of light conditions. I followed ants and kangaroo rats, little kids, old people, bighorn sheep, coyotes, rattlesnakes, lizards. I followed them to their homes, or their watering holes, or their stalking spots. I learned to recognize the marks they left on the earth as they passed. I stepped on branches and grass, memorized the spot, and came back 30 days in a row to watch the coloration changes a plant goes through while it's healing. There were no words to describe what I saw, but I saw it and remembered it.
Rachel sits up, bleeding from her head and damaged right knee.
Chopper one to tracker one.
Come in, Dale.
Where the hell are you?
I'm a half mile east of Quattro Summit.
Is there a place to land?
Yeah, it's pretty
Rachel
flat.
Heaves her backpack from her shoulders and searches inside for a flare and pliers.
I lay on the earth, and I watched it healing. And I wished there was a way my life could be healed.
Gripping the flare with the pliers, she rips out the firing pin.
Oh yeah, I see you. Coming in.
Sitting in the dirt and waving the red smoking flare above her head, the shadow of the helicopter passes over her, looking for a landing site. Slowly descending, the pilot lands. Rachel struggles to her feet, still dizzy from the fall and favoring her right leg. She picks up her backpack and hat and walks to the helicopter, a cloud of red smoke spewing from the flare as she moves away. As the rotor blades slow to a halt, the pilot waves to Rachel. The pilot and co-pilot go through their flight checks as Frank clambers from the helicopter. Rachel comes up the slope towards him. She's tired, surprised, and a little annoyed to see him, but greets him as he walks towards her carrying another backpack.
Hi.
Hi.
You okay? Corinne calls. She's very worried about you.
You know what my mama said once? She said, why don't you just go back to him? Give us all some peace. My cousin was there, and she said, Jane, she goes back to him, he kills her right off, and those sweet little children. And my mama said, well, then it'll be in the hands of God.
Frank's eyes are full of concern for Rachel as two men climb from the helicopter.
I'm bringing you in, Rachel. Elkwood Search and Rescue are here. They're going to take over your search.
She looks at them over his shoulder.
I'm staying out.
You're bleeding and you're exhausted.
You think I'm jeopardizing the search?
I didn't say that. But I'm ordering you now to get in the helicopter.
I don't take orders from men anymore.
Okay, I'm begging you.
She shakes her head.
Please get in the helicopter.
Not until she's found.
And what if you don't find her, Rachel? It took us 2 years to find the remains of Sarah Newberg.
Frank turns towards the chopper and then back to her, totally exasperated and at a loss for what to do. He hands her a bottle of water.
Here, drink this.
Frank, the coroner's office wants to know if they should be standing by. It's been almost 32 hours.
Yeah, but tell them to wait up at Victory Pass. I don't want the family to see them.
The Elkwood County trackers look on as Rachel drinks and Frank replaces her empty water bottle. He is desperately worried for her.
I want you to know that I love you very much.
He looks down at her and then walks to the helicopter, shaking hands with the two Elkwood County trackers.
All right, guys, she's staying. She's exhausted. Take good care of her. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Frank watches from the helicopter.
Jim.
Hey, Rachel.
Ed.
Hey, appreciate your help.
Let's go get her.
Yeah, let's go.
Rachel runs into where Rachel saw the last tracks. Behind them, the helicopter takes off and swings away to their left.
So, what do you got?
She came off the mountain here and headed off that way.
How old are these tracks, you figure?
A couple of hours. We had some wind.
As the helicopter flies off into a clear blue sky over the barren landscape, the trackers kneel by a very clear set of prints in the dirt.
She looks pretty beat up, too. She's all over the place. Real erratic.
She's not gonna last much longer.
We need to cover some ground. We ought to jump.
Jump?
The two flankers go way out and then converge about a quarter mile or so ahead of the point man. If either one finds a track, we all jump.
You've never done it before?
No, I usually work alone.
Well, why don't you stay on point? I mean, you followed her this far. Just see it through. Take the left.
Rachel follows the tracks as Ed and Jim walk away to the flanks. The earth shimmers in the heat. Rachel's leg has eased, but she still favors it.
I became a tracker to be alone. I know that now. The hours of tramping about, the precise observation, the demands for intense physical and mental exertion. None of them needed another human being. And then something happened. Going to the desert to escape people, I found myself searching for them again in the most literal way imaginable, following their tracks. But there was always something behind it. The hope that one day the tracks I followed would lead me to my own children, back home with me, safe and unharmed and happy.
Watching the other two get further away, Rachel remembers playing with her children in a hammock outside her house. Startled by the phone, she runs into the kitchen.
I'll be right back.
We can't come to the phone right now. Please leave a message.
Okay. So what I've decided is that my family is going to be together for Christmas. So, I'm coming out. I've decided to get married. It's stupid. No need for that. I've already got a wife and kids. So I'm coming out so we can all be together. What God joins together, let no man put asunder.
Kevin? No. We've made other plans.
Unmake them.
Kevin, we haven't been married for 7 years now. We're not family.
You really think, wife? You really think? You get away from me so easily. Make sure those kids are spotless and do it fast. I'm on my way.
Rachel slams the telephone down and runs out. Kevin, muttering furiously, redials.
John! Ruthie! Come on! Come in here!
What's the matter?
Let's go, folks.
Why won't you come with us?
Because we're safer if we're all split up.
But what if he hurts you?
He won't. He won't bother with me if he realizes that you're gone.
He won't find us, will he?
No, honey, he won't. Be brave. But don't!
Don't call me. You can't call me here. I'll find a way to call you.
Having put Ruthie and John on a bus, Rachel stands desolate at the side of the road, watching as the bus drives away into the distance. Back in the mountains, the sun is even higher in the sky and the heat is intensifying. The glare bleaches the ground, making it look almost white with bright green bushes dotted around. Rachel looks up into the cloudless sky and wipes the sweat from her face and neck. She is exhausted, hardly able to move. She stumbles and slumps forward onto her hands and knees. Something catches her eye. A flash of colour that shouldn't be here. Through the bushes, obscured by the heat haze, she sees a purple rucksack with green shoulder straps lying in a clump of grass. It is a child's backpack. Rachel looks around, trying to see the other two, but they are nowhere to be seen. She picks up the backpack and opens it, pulling out a Barbie doll. She just stares at it.
I think I got something. I'm at 2 o'clock. Rachel!
Gathering her strength, Rachel wrenches the backpack free of the grass and struggles on to where Ed and Jim are squatting down looking at tracks in the dirt.
There's no detail, but it's the right stride. Toed in right foot.
Yeah, that's her.
All right, we're closing.
She shows them the doll.
Is it hers?
Yeah.
So this is good. She's still thinking. She's lightening your load.
She doesn't know she dropped it.
Well, you can't know that for sure.
She might have left the backpack behind in the garbage. She would never leave her Barbie. She doesn't know it's gone.
I'm gonna have to take your word on that one.
Okay, let's do it again.
Randy!
Ed and Jim head off to the flanks again as Rachel zips up the backpack and takes the middle line up the mountain. Taking a deep breath, she ducks her head forward and starts again.
Andy!
I was sure. There was no question in my mind. If we could know when we were about to lose what we most love, we wouldn't do it. We would die before we let it slip through our hands.
Rachel remembers the bus carrying her children back to her. Standing by her car at the bus stop, she watches the bus pull up. A relieved, happy freshness lightens her face.
Mommy! Oh, sweetie!
Mama!
Hello!
Hi! How is Grandma?
The bus doors close, and happily the three of them get into the car and drive off down the dusty highway.
Wasn't so bad.
A car is parked ahead of them.
It's a strange place for that car to. Why don't you guys just get the.
Slowly and with growing apprehension, Rachel drives past the car. Her eyes suddenly widen with fear. Kevin leers out of the other car and turns it around to follow them.
Oh, God. Stay down, guys. I'm so sorry.
Rachel accelerates hard, desperately trying to get away from him and reach town. When she gets there, she parks outside the sheriff's office. Grabbing the children, she rushes in a panic inside to find help at the reception desk.
Help! I need help. My ex-husband's trying to kill us.
A deputy slowly crosses behind the desk and looks out of the door. Looking at Rachel, he opens the door and checks outside.
Where is he?
He was at my house.
Have you got a restraining order, ma'am?
A restraining order wouldn't work.
You need to talk to a judge. First door on the left.
Mom!
Mom! He's here! Mom!
No, Kevin. No! No! Although the courts had failed me before, I tried once again to ask for protection. And this time, the judge believed me. Entirely believed that Kevin had abused us. But he also thought the kids should know their biological father. He gave Kevin 8 hours unsupervised time
with John and Ruthie.
Rachel sits in her car outside the courthouse waiting.
And that was the last time I saw them.
She stares straight out of the front windscreen of the car, looking completely desolate. The sun breaks into the flashback, beating relentlessly down on the mountainside. Rachel can hardly keep going. Her eyes are glazed and she shuffles forward, barely staying on her feet. Suddenly, all her strength evaporates and she falls to the ground on her hands and knees, her backpack seemingly too heavy for her now. The helicopter rises from behind a sheer-faced wall of rock and spots her crumpled form in the dust.
Chopper one to Rachel. That's no place for a snooze. Chopper one to Ed. Rachel's down. She needs some help. She's in a wash just south of your position. You better check her out.
I'm okay. I'm okay.
I can't land there. Get someplace flat.
It's okay, Chopper One. I'm with her. I'll let you know if we need you.
Rachel Thanks. Grapples with her radio as the chopper turns away and Ed races to get her and pick her up.
She can't be far.
Oh, this doesn't look good.
She can't be.
We need to find some shade. Come on. You're lucky I make house calls. Any vomiting?
No.
Cramps?
Yeah.
You've been drinking straight water all this time?
I have some banana chips.
Ed checks in her backpack.
Yeah, but you haven't been...
Taking a bottle of powdered salts from his backpack, he pours it into Rachel's remaining water bottle and hands it back to her.
Here. This tastes foul, but it'll boost your electrolytes.
Ed, I got a print about 1,000 feet out here at 10 o'clock.
Copy.
Oh, she couldn't make it that far. We don't have footprints now. She's crawling.
Ed, come on. We're closing in.
All right, all right. I need to check it out. Call the chopper down. Okay?
Ed rushes on up the mountain, leaving Rachel sitting, drinking water, leaning against a rock. She looks along the wash to her left, grimacing with pain and exhaustion. She puts the top back on the bottle and, gritting her teeth, she leans on her cane and the bottle for support as she struggles to her feet. Rachel staggers forward a meter or so on her knees, desperately trying to keep her balance. Stumbling forward, she loses her footing and crashes face down in the dirt. She lies there, unable to move. But as she opens her eyes, she sees something. The merest trace of a print, and her strength starts to return.
She's here.
Rachel looks up into the clear blue sky. The sun is even brighter and hotter than ever. She looks in the direction the tracks lead. There are banks either side of the wash, suggesting that a river flows here in the winter. Now it is just dry rock and dirt. Rachel gathers her strength and half crawling, half crouching, she staggers, following the wash up into the mountains. The rock bank gets higher and higher either side. The rocks seem to close in on Rachel now. They are no longer simply obscuring Mandy's tracks, but seem deliberately to hinder Rachel's progress. She stumbles over rocks and trips over tree roots. The sun is now so high in the sky that even stumbling between the tall rocks, there is no shade. She comes to a fork between the dried-up riverbed and an arid tributary and stops, deciding which way to go before trudging on up the riverbed.
Mandy!
Her searching becomes even more desperate.
Mandy!
Stumbling round a rocky outcrop, she looks wildly ahead, her face taut with worry and desperation. She stumbles sideways, falling heavily on the outcrop. As she tries to stand, she slips again, and grabbing her bottle, she looks to her left and stops dead. The pain and anguish drop from her face as they're washed away. Taking off her sunglasses, she rocks. A little girl with badly sunburnt arms and legs and a blistered face is lying in the hollow. Mandy seems to be asleep, obviously exhausted. All feelings of fatigue are forgotten as Rachel scrambles to pick Mandy up. Taking her into her arms, she grabs her radio.
Mandy? Hello, Mandy?
Mommy?
Yes, honey. Oh, yes, Mandy. Yes, Mandy. Oh. Yes, honey.
Kissing the top of Mandy's head, Rachel wraps her arms around the little girl and looks up into the sky for the helicopter to come into view. At the base, Mandy is put onto a stretcher and lifted into an air ambulance helicopter surrounded by paramedics, her mother standing by.
Yeah, so you're in. Temperature's 106.9. Pulse is 120. Blood pressure is 65.
Rachel is treated by a paramedic and then gets up to walk over to Mandy's mother.
Yeah, that's okay, correct. Baby. ETA about 20 minutes.
I don't know how to thank you.
Rachel hands her Mandy's Barbie.
Ma'am, this way. Okay, baby, climb on in.
Okay, baby. Hey, girl. Next time we do the whole hike together. Be brave, Mandy.
Rachel nods to the air ambulance pilot and walks to join the paramedics who treated her. They pack up their medical equipment and stow it in the ambulance before shutting the doors. They all turn to watch as the air ambulance rotors start to turn. Vehicles are moved out of the way to clear the takeoff area. As the rotors spin faster, the air is awash with clouds of dust and everyone takes cover behind vehicles or holding up their arms to protect their faces. The air ambulance takes off and flies away over the mountains. Rachel stares after it. Her face no longer shows pain or fear, just a satisfied, contented relief with a touch of sadness. She accepts the congratulations of the rescue teams and sits in the shade of a lorry, leaning back against its front tire.
Tracking means learning to walk alongside other people, caring enough to reach out. With no guarantees you'll ever meet. With no guarantees they'll live or die despite your best efforts. Tracking means being willing to try. Above all, to me, tracking means sitting quietly and watching my own existence, trying to understand the significance of the tracks each of us leaves behind as we move through life. Facing memories and fears head on, facing the end of hope, and somehow continuing past it. Learning, in short, to walk alongside myself. Tracking brings more than the lost child.
Stretching her sore right leg out in front of her, she watches Frank cross to her and sit down.
Hi.
Hi.
You okay?
One stitch. Roger's big on overkill.
Well, at least he got you to slow down. So how's Mandy?
She's badly sunburned, but I don't think there'll be any permanent damage.
Her spirits?
Better than her body. She can't wait to get out there again.
So did she tell you why she left the camp?
She went to the restroom. Then she took off after a bunny. Then she followed a lizard. Then she saw a flower. Then she saw a bird. And then she realized, and I quote, parents were lost.
Well, somebody should disabuse her of that notion.
Oh, I did. I did the whole ranger drill.
Yeah, me too. Except I've been doing it in about 5 different languages. Seems like every time I turn around, somebody's sticking a microphone in my face. I did like a half hour for Japanese television. I just looked at it, and they've cut it down to 1 sentence. If you realize that you're lost, you should just sit.
I'm sitting. Corrine called.
Yeah. She's on her way to Missouri. Kevin's cousin says that he knows where Kevin put the kids.
Rachel looks away from Frank, terrified of what she's thinking. She swallows hard several times, choking back the onset of tears. She brushes a fly from her face.
Alive or dead?
I'd just be guessing. I don't know.
How long ago?
5 hours ago. But if she'd have tried to call in, it would have been impossible. This place has been a zoo.
Frank. When you're out there, you have to see the bad signs as well as the good signs. Or you're not seeing the truth.
Rachel, come. You don't know.
Shh.
Rachel raises her hand, palm up, to stop him and looks at Frank, who returns her gaze. His eyes reach for her, trying to comfort the woman he loves.
Take me home, Frank.
Frank nods and picks up his gear. Rachel stands stiffly and grabs her backpack, cane, and hat. It is dark when they get home. Frank turns the light on in the kitchen. The message received light blinks red on the answering machine, and Frank reaches for it.
Don't.
Rachel stands, shrugging off her backpack. She desperately wants to tell Frank what she is feeling, but bottles it up. He watches her from behind, and closing the door, unbuckles his belt while Rachel dumps her gear on a chair. She goes to the kitchen and looks at the photographs on the fridge door. Nearly crying, but almost unable to, she looks into the children's bedroom and goes in, crossing it to the living room. Frank drops his belt onto their bed and follows her through the house. He drops onto the sofa. Two sets of bedding lie on the floor. Rachel kneels at the foot of the beds and starts to roll them up. Frank watches. The sadness in his face seems too much to bear as he rests his head on his hands.
You sure you want to be doing this now, Rachel?
She keeps rolling the bedding, not looking at him, although his eyes never leave her.
Would you like some help?
She looks up and half smiles, nodding yes. He joins her on the floor and starts to pack away the pillows as she rolls the bedding up towards him. Rachel fights to hold back the tears, but the closer she gets to Frank, the more impossible it becomes. She looks up into his kind, worried face and reaches for him, clinging to his shoulders, racked with pain and sorrow. He envelops her in his arms and holds her. The flashing red light of a police car suddenly lights up the front room as Corrine arrives at the house.
Wait here.
Corrine gets out of the car and walks to the house to see what is happening.
Is Rachel here?
Well, yes, she is. She's inside.
Ah. Goodness.
Oh, you must be Corrine. Hi, I'm Frank.
Hi, yes. God, we've been everywhere. Headquarters, search camp, the hospital, and now here. You people check your machine?
Well, no, not...
Corrine looks over Frank's shoulder as Rachel comes out of the house. Quickly, Corrine turns, rushing to the back door of the police car and flings it open.
Come on, wake up.
Rachel watches in disbelief as John and Ruthie step from the car. Corrine smiles at Frank as Rachel hugs her children.
Well, I gotta go.
Frank looks on as Rachel hugs Corrine.
Thank you. Thank you. See you guys. Okay, home, Jeeves.
Thanks again.
Bye.
We all like happy endings. I used to think if I would only tell and remember the good times, perhaps I could draw more of them to us. It doesn't work that way. Kevin got out on bail. Our house was broken into 16 times in the 6 weeks before his trial. Felony kidnapping charges were reduced to a misdemeanor if he promised to leave us alone. And he did. The three of us haven't seen him in years, but he continues to haunt us. Our phone rings at 4:30 in the morning, and no one's there. We've changed our names, our addresses, our phone numbers so many times, we've given up trying. Most recently, the phone started ringing only when Ruthie is home alone. Nonetheless, we have learned to walk on anyway, putting one foot in front of the other for as long as it takes, counting on things working out all right for all of us. It's a tracker's brand of hope, on a trail that in the end, we all walk, each of our lives representing an unbroken chain stretching back to the beginning of time, each of our tracks embedded in a web that stretches to eternity. None of us walks alone.
Mountains, Rachel, Ruthie, and John look out over the rocky terrain, knowing that the worst is behind them. The future stretches ahead of them like a trail through the mountains, but this time they will walk that path together. The end. Linda Hamilton starred as Rachel, with Kevin Kilmer, Sam Hennings, and Kieran Vandenblink co-starring. Mary Kay Place was Corrine. The music was written by Stuart Levin. The film was produced by Joe Broido and Robert J. Wilson, and the associate producer was Frederic Moreau-Fechner. Based on the book by Hannah Nayala, Point Last Scene was directed by Elodie Keane. Audio description services for British Sky Broadcasting. Voiced by Marston York on behalf of MCS Agency. The audio dubbing engineer was Richard Mannering, and the producer, Sue Mackey.